Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins's office stands at the intersection of an intense set of crimes, from 10 shootings in Boston over the weekend to multiple incidents of apparent extremism and hate, including the stabbing of a rabbi in Brighton and the shooting deaths of two Black residents of Winthrop last month. All of that unfolding as Rollins continues a reckoning over tens of thousands of drug cases that may have been tainted by mismanagement and drug use at the labs that process the evidence. And she joins us live to talk about all of it. DA Rollins, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
So we had you scheduled for today, DA Rollins, before the 10 shootings this past weekend. Still, I'd like us to start there. Five different incidents involved. Do you have any updates for us beyond what was known as of earlier today?
Well, the Boston Police Department continues to work round the clock to try to make arrests in some of these shootings. It is an uptick that we are not happy with, but we've made one arrest with respect to some of those already, and we hope to be working and continue to work with our law enforcement partners to make more. I do want people to know there were no fatalities. That is, you know, not, we are happy nobody died and certainly don't want these numbers to continue to increase. But our Crime Strategies Bureau, along with the BRIC and the Fusion Center at the Mass State Police, we are all working hard to make sure we're taking these illegal guns off the street and holding people accountable for violent, serious crimes.
Does anything change in sort of your work or the way you respond, the way you're thinking about things after an outbreak of 10 shootings like this over a single weekend?
Yeah, we are constantly adapting. This is why having a crime strategies bureau that looks at data, arrests, when people are being released, whether there are tensions between different groups of individuals, or whether these are one-off situations. We are very, very happy. There were no fatalities this weekend. Overall, there are significantly less shootings at this time this year than they were last year. But that stat doesn't matter because there were still 10 this weekend, right? So we are in constant contact with each other and we are adjusting appropriately to see whether we can have more presence. We can understand why some of these shootings may have happened or individuals released recently. But we want to be more proactive rather than reactive to this type of violence.
So over the last couple of years here on the show, we've really focused a lot on community support, community interventions to stop community violence. You bring the law enforcement perspective on the show today. So I want to ask you, what do you see as the most important strategy that Boston's not using right now to help minimize community violence? Is there a piece of the puzzle that's really missing and needs to be there?
We have to acknowledge, coming out of a global pandemic, and we are not fully out of it yet, that there are tons of stressors and things that are exacerbating many of the problems that, you know, result in crime. So, depending on the ages of the individuals that are the culprits of this violence, I think we can be working not just as law enforcement, but as you had said, with our community partners, with municipal, state and federal partners to see whether there are, programs and opportunities for individuals to be receiving the help that they need. Additionally, we have to be really diligent regarding people who are coming home from a carceral facility and re-entering into a community where there might be a feud that they have. These are all things working together. I think everything is connected, and we need our mayors and city managers, our city councilors, and our state reps and senators all thinking about this, and the community as well, to have jobs, housing, good education opportunities, et cetera, so that we can start thinking about crime differently.
So Larry Calderoni is the head of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. He said that seeing police respond to multiple incidents like over this past weekend showed, quote, the absurdity of the defund the police movement and the lunacy of those who support it, end quote. I kind of juxtapose that in my head against the story in the Boston Globe today about a new unarmed crisis unit in Lynn. From your seat, what is the right balance between enforcement, crisis response in these moments?
So first and foremost, we had an officer, three officers that were almost injured in a routine traffic stop where we arrested Theodore Gamble Williams. And he did sustain an injury in that, but we are very happy that no officers or community members were harmed during this traffic stop, where the individual had, of course, did not have a license to carry the firearm that the police saw during the stop. And I need to start by saying being a police officer is an incredibly hard and difficult job. I think both of these things can happen at the same time, right? I think, and I need to be clear, I think we need to rethink how much we are asking the police to do. But I need to be clear, when I show up at a homicide scene, I don't want a social worker standing next to me. I want a police officer, a member of law enforcement, who understands how to de-escalate or has handled a violent, serious situation. There can be social workers there as well to assist the community or the individuals that have been impacted by the trauma. But we do need the police for these violent, serious situations that we see ourselves in. Imagine if we didn't have a police officer in Winthrop. We would be dealing with far more, you know, death potentially and harm in that circumstance. Imagine if we didn't have a police officer in Brighton when that rabbi, thank God, with all of the skills that he had, outmaneuvered Mr. Awad and was able to save his own life. And then the police came to end that threat. So we do need to work hand in hand with the police, but we also need collaborative law enforcement partners in a lot of these circumstances as well.
We're talking to Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins. DA Rollins, since you brought up Brighton and Winthrop, let's stay there for a minute. Two possible hate crimes in the last couple of weeks. In one case, a rabbi in Brighton stabbed 8 times. Less than a week later, I think those are reversed. A shooter killed 2 black people in Winthrop. After witnesses say he walked by and did not shoot multiple people who were not black. First of all, as a prosecutor, I want to know, you've talked extensively about the potential hate in both of these crimes. Do you think we are seeing a spike in hate crimes?
We are absolutely seeing a spike in hate crimes nationally. We see anti-Semitic rhetoric and hatred and violence on the rise across our country. We have seen black trans women being murdered, significantly high numbers across our country, including, of course, Puerto Rico, where there are things happening there as well. We've seen uptick, of course, in the AAPI community, and even more troubling, the elders in that community, as if it were not enough to just target a community, but many of the individuals that are being harmed and attacked are also protected based on their age, not only their either national origin, race, ethnicity, and other things. So sadly, we are. And I think what is troubling is we believe in the North oftentimes that, oh, that type of stuff doesn't happen here. And or that there are certain communities, for example, the Jewish community that, oh, you know, they don't need our help. Yes, they do. We are seeing in Winthrop, in his own words, what Nathan Allen believed. We saw, this is not me speculating. We are looking at his handwriting, stating vile things about black people, drawing swastikas. We know now that on his phone, when we found his phone, that he was on an anti-Semitic website, right? And although no individuals of the Jewish faith, thank God, were not killed that day in Winthrop, we have said out loud, and so have other members of law enforcement, that box truck that was speeding down the street, had it not hit a car and then hit a property, was, if you took a right, the only two things down there are a temple and Deer Island. So where was he going? That's number one. And then very clearly in Brighton, we have situations with Mr. Awad, which is different. He's alive and he will be held accountable by us, but he is innocent until proven guilty. But we recently charged him with 2 hate crimes, bringing the total charges to 9, 7 felonies, 2 misdemeanors. And we are very confident that this attack was based and rooted in hate and anti-Semitism.
So again, just like this piece of the puzzle that we were talking about with community violence, I mean, hate is a community experience and often in some way or another a community perpetration. I wonder, as a law enforcement person, as a district attorney, given that we are seeing this increase, what do you see as your role and the role of your office in stemming this and reversing over time this tide? Tide's probably a melodramatic word, but I think you understand what I mean.
Of course I do. We have to speak out when it happens. I don't like the fact that, you know, my role at this point is reactionary, right? Sadly, this rabbi, you know, while the Jewish community has been screaming and saying there's a rise in anti-Semitism and nobody, you know, or not enough of us have been listening, we need only look over our shoulder to Duxbury and the football team or the Holocaust Memorial, where in the last 5 to 6 years, it's been desecrated not once, but twice, right? Winthrop has absolutely taints of anti-Semitism, as I said. And then we saw what happened in Brighton. What I want to do is not hide in the darkness and pretend it doesn't happen. These conversations are hard. They are challenging. They are hurtful. They make us confront things that, you know, nobody wants to wake up and talk about these type of things. But if we continue to ignore it, it will continue to exist. And that is why I chose, you know, to release the information about Nathan Allen in his own words, and why I choose, not just as a prosecutor, but to stand with the Jewish community and to say, we are going to stand with you and make sure that we root out this type of hate, hold people accountable when they do it, so it is a deterrent.
So just to clarify for listeners, when you say Duxbury, you're referring to the anti-Semitic play calls that were being used by the football team since 2010, just for listeners to clarify. I'd like to shift here now to the drug lab, because we've got stuff to talk about here, too. At the end of last week, you filed a motion with the Supreme Judicial Court, Massachusetts' highest court. It represents a, quote, global resolution of thousands of cases, end quote, in relation to cases connected to the now closed William A. Hinton State Laboratory Institute, after two chemists there, Annie Dukin, Sonia Farrick, were separately found to be botching samples. We are talking about as many as 70,000 convictions in this case. Is that correct?
Yes, at least. And only in Suffolk County. I want to be very clear that what we filed was only related to the jurisdiction I have, right? I am not encroaching on other district attorneys at all. I am simply saying, and the Hinton Lab, by the way, is in Suffolk County. It was in Jamaica Plain before it was closed by Governor Patrick. But yes, we are looking at upwards of 70,000 Suffolk County certifications that might be impacted here.
So I know you've talked with us before about the importance of people having trust in the system. You're asking the SJC to look at all these cases, which basically means regardless of whether one of the two disgraced chemists worked on it. Part of the filing from your office reads, quote, the public deserves to have faith in the government if we continue to refuse to acknowledge our failures and misdeeds at the Hinton Lab or cling to being right for fear of opening the floodgates regarding the tens of thousands of impacted cases and individuals. We will have lost a tremendous opportunity to show true leadership and reconciliation, end quote. This global approach does run the risk that some cases might be declared for new trials when they weren't handled by those who, by, let's say, Dukin and Farrick. Do you have any concern that if the global retrial happens, that that undermines trust by casting too wide a net?
No, I don't. Because as the government, we don't get to, I read a great article where a criminal defense attorney said, you don't get to cheat and win as the government. So let me just clarify one thing I said. The motion that we filed was technically in the Superior Court asking Judge Rajuti to send our motion up to the state Supreme Judicial Court. So that's number one. People need to understand the distinction between there were two chemists, both of whom engaged in criminal conduct. There were times when both of them were at the Hinton Laboratory, and the Hinton Lab, we know for sure, was not managed appropriately. So these are multiple failures. This is Farrakh and Dukin failing horrifically and criminally. And then the lab above and beyond those two was not managed appropriately. So we have systemic failures. And what I am not going to do is piecemeal make each of these impacted defendants come back to us and file a motion and have to go to each judge working this out. Systemic failures require systemic solutions. So I am not afraid of casting too broad a net. I think as a government, we need to, and that is what is going to instill faith back in the system.
I know your time is tight. Do you have time for one more question?
Always. Go ahead.
So this feels like a story that continues to be a source of shame for the state. And we are talking orders of magnitude that are breathtaking here, 70,000 cases. If what you are asking for happens, is healing there? Are we past the shame, or is there more that has to be done to move our Commonwealth past this blot?
Well, we have set up the Hinton Lab Initiative, and I think that's a lot of the work that we're doing right now. With respect to any sort of, this isn't truth, justice, and reconciliation per se, but we have to acknowledge the systemic failures that have happened here. Hard stop. And then we need to work on making sure that we set protocols in place so that it can never happen again. And once we start doing that with community involvement, not just law enforcement, not just prosecutors, but criminal defense attorneys and others, I think that is when we start moving toward a place where we can all sit down and say, okay, right? All I needed was an acknowledgement. And then we can start sort of moving forward. It's going to be hard, but we have to start there.
Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins, DA Rollins, thanks for starting the week with us. We appreciate it.
Take care.
You too.